should have you listen. Tell me, have you got a boy you can send? Well, this is what I want him to do. Put him on his bike right away. See if he can get my message through. Something like yesterday. Send a telegram, send a telegram. Oh, send a telegram, man. To my baby. Do you hear what I say? Oh, it's to the Union Man. Why don't you send a telegram? Oh, send a telegram to my baby. What's to the Union Man? Ooh, send a telegram. Oh, send a telegram.
Okay, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. We're happy to be here with you and glad you're with us. And I have Miss Lucy Gay today, and I'm happy that Poca Lanui stayed in with us and to talk about various issues, especially the benefits of having Kahea, the Hawaii Environmental Alliance. And they've done some good things, and in the future there's some other issues about and need some help, and want you to hear about them, and maybe you can support them financially or what have you. But we're going to talk about many issues over there. And just to give you an idea, when we talk about the West Side, I think they do throughout the state of Hawaii. But I, just the other day, I was driving out and thinking, why do we need groups like Kahea, EnviroWatch, and others? And why do we need people on the radio talking about what the government is not doing? And so, driving out to Ko'olina, and I'm driving along, and it struck me. Maybe here's a reason. If you, I want you, when you're driving out there, look at the beautification, look at the highways and the absence of potholes and what have you. And just as you pass Ko'olina, look at the lines and the markings and the buttons in the road to keep the marking the lanes. Right to Ko'olina, everything is fine. The lines are defined well and painted and striped. And once you leave Ko'olina, I mean physically, leave, it's visible. You start to notice the potholes, you start to see the bead of gravel there coming out of the landfill, which is deadly. I mean, it's like driving on ball bearings, and the mud tracking in. And as you progressively go further into progress on, you see it getting worse, then you're hitting your potholes. Just, I mean, there's no transition. It's an abrupt pothole thing. So that for me is just one reason, as an example, why the disparity and why you need to be citizens, groups need to be about, because someone's just not delving out the resources. So, Lucy, thank you for joining me, and Poca, thank you for staying around with us.
It's a pleasure.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Kahea and your involvement, and you as a beneficiary of it, or the community as a, and you know firsthand in some of the issues and some of the programs they've helped you with.
Right. Yeah. I work out in Waianae. I'm part of the University of Hawaii Leeward Community College. We operate a satellite center in Waianae Town for the Waianae people. And in my position as director for Waianae Educational Opportunities, I spend a lot of time interacting with the community residents, with groups as well as individuals. And in my years working there, it's come to be very, very apparent to me that we'll never be without work in Waianae. There is so much to be done. And while we have various members of the university team addressing the educational needs and the disparities that are out there. There's still other things that need, to be addressed. It's like approaching the situation as though one were a gardener or a farmer. You know, you can simply put the seedlings in the ground and hope to God that it'll grow. And if you leave it to God, it will grow.
Mm-hmm.
But it will grow even healthier and sturdier if the farmer or the gardener paid attention to the preparation of the soil,
mm-hmm.
The clearing of the land, and all those things. And so I think that what I'm doing out in that community is paying attention to the soil in which our community, our youngsters, grow up. And hopefully if the soil is strong, then the complementary services we provide through education will even be more productive and perhaps would accelerate opportunities for people because they're now ready to learn
mm-hmm.
in an environment that's very, very nurturing. And so over the years, we've taken a look at what are those things in Waianae, in the environment, that work against good production.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very clear, and to a lot of people in the audience, that the way in which the community has been treated leaves much to be desired. For example, you hear a lot of the community saying they're the dump site. They're where we take all the nasty things that we don't want to see or look at away from our view plane
mm-hmm.
and hide it behind the Waianae Range because, you know, that range in some way serves as a curtain for a lot of things that that we in Honolulu don't have to look at, and if we don't see it, it's out of mind. So the landfills are a constant irritant for people out there. And as you talked earlier, Carol, about the potholes, you know, the potholes are another daily reminder of the road conditions. And I know there are potholes all over the island.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not the only one. But it speaks to government and where they're putting their priorities. And I know they have tough choices. But for us in Waianae, who live there, the challenges that the environment places on is very severe. In other parts of the United States, they talk about this concept called environmental justice.
Mm-hmm.
And that concept came about, it's actually an executive order that says, you know, the United States government recognizes that there are communities that are have certain profile, and they're always poor, low income, minority, and along with that come all the other descriptors, probably without the full benefits of fine education, and without full benefits of a communication system to help inform people. And sometimes it's just a total disregard by leadership for the well-being
mm-hmm.
of folks who live far out from town, who are poor and who are minority. And so Waianae in some way is like that. It's isolated from town via the geography of Waianae, a mountain range.
Mm-hmm.
It is an area that has for years and years, decades, appeared on education. This is the district that tends to constantly and perpetually underperform. And I'm not negating the fine examples here and there that we do have. We do produce some outstanding students, but
mm-hmm.
generally that's the viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And economically, we have that other stereotypic reputation for high subsidy by various forms of both federal and state funds. So one can say our area is like those communities, other parts of the United States, the Deep South, where one can predict without a blink in the eye that there will be environmental injustices perpetrated on those communities. And therein lies the work that we do, and the excellent service we get from Kahea to equalize
mm-hmm.
the battle. And I'll talk further about
mm-hmm.
what the Goliaths are like and, and what the little Davids are like.
And you would be described as the David.
As the David.
Or you are the David.
In more ways than one.
But Polka, you are resident there many, many, many years. And what do you see that needs to be done, and you have any explanation of why is it broken?
I think Waianae, there's a different perspective to Waianae as well. While we recognize the negative social statistics, the prison numbers and all of those things, Waianae historically, and this comes from its geography itself, whenever warriors would take over the island of Oahu, the Oahu warriors would seek refuge in Waianae, and they would regenerate themselves, and then they would come back and take over the island of Oahu. The cultural pattern is that within Waianae, the land itself breeds a certain resistance, breeds a certain spirit that is known as the tenacious, rebellious spirit. And you can even smell it in the flowers and in the plants that grow. They become very strong things that grow out of the area. Some would say that the gods in the mountains look down upon the valleys and the areas, so that whatever grows out in Waianae becomes that rebellious, tenacious spirit. But when reflected within the colonial system that has been brought into Hawaii and the rebellion against these systems, it's sort of like that. The people who had been in different parts of Oahu have come out to Waianae and they are regenerating themselves. So while we see it through the optics of the system as being all of the negative statistics, there is still the other part of Waianae, which is a treasure of the continuing spirit of resistance, whether it is expressed in the sovereignty movement or in the tenaciousness of being native Hawaiian and that kind of stuff. And out of that breeds a lot of what I think to be cutting edge thinking in terms of where we need to be in our Hawaii, where Waianae needs to be. And so you find a lot of turmoil. Whenever you have waters from, let's say, the salt water and the fresh water coming to meet, you have a lot of turmoil. But a lot of interesting stuff comes out of it. And I would see Waianae as being that as well. Yes, we do have the remnants of, or the effects of, the colonial society coming in and pressing itself into Waianae, but you also see that resistance. So it's a very interesting situation that we have. Of course, when you see it only from one perspective, as a child growing up in Waianae, you don't really comprehend the turmoil that results from these intersecting forces. I think an organization such as Kahea, which is now the first time I have heard of that organization, is very important to act as that buffer to bring about understanding, appreciation, and a clear vision of where the battles are and how we can assist in resisting that kind of continuing pressure on our lifestyle. We had started an organization, I think very similar to Kahea. It was called Legal Services for Children, in which we tried to represent for free any child who needed legal services to bring an action against the Department of Education for the failure to provide appropriate special education services. But operating so many things in Waianae, we just couldn't hang on to that, and we didn't get enough funding, so our attorneys were at times doing the services for free, and we were not able to pay our own administrative costs. But to hear of Kahea now coming in and joining the battle, I think it's a welcome sign of additional support coming in to support this.
You know, to borrow a bit of your metaphor about the two waters meeting, salt and fresh, Well, you know that an estuary is brackish water,
mm-hmm.
and that is where you get your finest, the beginning of life, because those that live in the ocean return to live in the brackish water, many of them. And so, Waianae, if you didn't have Waianae, the way I view it is that on this island, other than Waimanalo and maybe some of the Punalulu side, you really don't have a foothold anymore with the Hawaiian culture, as far as I see the opportunity, the people, the what goes on. So it's good when you drive through and you see the mountains. I mean, we talk about the potholes, but I think that's just to mention the tip of the iceberg as far as the system. When the system taxes the people there, it's not as though they don't. When the kids, even the poor kids, when they go and buy a Coke, they're paying taxes on that. So it's not as if they're in a separate nation per se when it comes to monies, but that money isn't returned back to that community.
Yes, so I think we've kind of set the groundwork of the where we are, where we see ourselves to be through the back of our eyeballs, and how people see us as we look at them through the front of their eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
You can see there's different approaches to something that we're all looking at, and that's the landscape. And so for the people in Waianae, they have a large investment because it's the place where they live, and they all want to live well in their place.
Mm-hmm.
So where is it that we want to be? And Poka so nicely reminded the long history of Waianae, in that they don't sit down and roll over and take things because someone says that shall be the way it shall be.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a welcome thing, because I think it speaks to the vitality of people, that they're not, you know, under the hot sun just lazy lying around. Don't be mistaken. So where is it that Waianae wants to be? Well, clearly, with some of the issues facing our community now, there is a real difference. There is a high pressure to move the urban opportunities, the urban-like opportunities, further away from the urban center, as you're seeing it done both in the La'ie area and, again, out in our area, because the temptation is there. Typically, when you look at agricultural communities, and that is what Waianae is, it has always been an agricultural community, a rural community, you will find a lot of open space, because that's what agriculture does. They operate in big open spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, those lands are taxed at the lower rate. So the opportunity to make a big killing is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And as the city starts to expand, it's very easy for people to see the opportunity to go into our, you know, rural areas. And yet, the city, in their general plan and in designating urban cores and second urban cities and all that, do that because their intention is to contain the growth
mm-hmm.
in the urban areas, and to preserve the rural country areas for sustenance so we can feed ourselves. And therein lies the push and pull, because now comes the third actor, and that's the people who want to, you know, capitalize
mm-hmm.
on the opportunity that's there. And so the community is put into a position of having to either be proactive and put signs up and say, go home, no come, or to wait for things to happen and people to put their signs saying sold, and here's our plan, and we're going to redefine how you live in your place
mm-hmm.
while I go home to where I live somewhere else in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And that will undoubtedly rile people, especially those whose front yards run close to these
mm-hmm.
proposed change development. And then they'll come up and express and live up to their reputation as being a place of resistance.
Well, let's talk specifically about one project that I know that Kahea helped recently, was the Tropic Land.
Yes.
if you the two of you could talk about that or what took place and share with the listeners what was the problem and how did Cahill help, and if it was not were not for them, what would have happened?
Well, tropic land is exactly as I said earlier. Here was agricultural land, wide open, lots of acreage, cheap, over 200 acres, sold for $3 million, maybe $400,000. And the developer comes in with a plan to redefine the area from agricultural to urban so they can create a light industrial park on 90 of their flat lands.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately adjacent, abutting their boundary, there's a road that goes through, but across from their road are all farms, all sorts of farms, active farms.
Mm-hmm.
And the only legal way for the industrial park and their trucks and their people who are going to operate, the only way they can get to the property is coming up the country road that is used by farmers. There's no other legal entrance. So there's a conflict here.
Mm-hmm.
Between not only use, but compatibility of activities. Because, you know, we have to talk. Some of our farms out there have their permit. They've been cleared. They have their certificate as a place that produces and packages their food in a very safe way so that when they go to market, you and I as customers know that it's safe to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Those certificates could be jeopardized by all sorts of things. But there's no second thought about the impact that the new developer is going to have on the old occupants of the farmland. So that was the problem. And eventually this situation was going to end up before a governmental body for
mm-hmm.
decision making. And though that body was going to be the Land Use Commission. And you know well that is likened to a judicial legal body.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to know how to operate before that panel. And, you know, the particular group that took this issue on were the Kupuna. It's the Concerned Elders of Waianae, and they've never been before a body like that. They're all upstanding citizens. I don't think any of them even went to traffic court.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you prepare in their time, deadlines, all kinds of things, evidentiary things to do, and it's foreign land.
Mm-hmm.
So a body like Kahea, this is an attorney, this is a group whose sole purpose is to look at the environmental issues confronting Hawaii and to offer their legal services to a group like the Concerned Elders of Waianae was
mm-hmm.
a godsend.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know how the Kupuna would have been able to meet all the deadlines. I guess the panel would have to be very forgiving.
Yeah, and
in the process.
And it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and it might have worked against us, but Kahea was there, and they were able to take us through the process, and the end result was the Concerned Elders of Waianae stopped the project. The vote was 6-0
mm-hmm.
At the Land Use Commission level. But
mm-hmm.
the battle's not over.
You prevailed in that instance to thwart the development or the
yeah.
approval before the
land use,
the state land use
yes,
commission.
Yes.
And what's the status now? It's not over, obviously, because
no.
like Russ, it never sleeps. When they developers, they continue.
You know, the manager for the tropic land property at one point in the proceedings said that without the road, and he was referencing the Lualualei Naval Access Road. Without that road, tropic land would not have a project
mm-hmm.
because the legal entrance was problematic. And the efficient entrance was a private road owned by the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular road is not just any old road. It's a road that leads to a high security facility. So there are homeland security issues involved in, you know, who uses the road and how much of the road they use. So without that road, they knew it was going to be tough, and that is what stood in their way. Now, the developer could go back and try to negotiate a long-term lease for access to the road. and they could come back. So the battle is still there.
Mm-hmm.
They could come back in a year, I think, mm-hmm. to the Land Use Commission.
And more than likely they will.
Well, that's where they hide nuclear weapons, although the Navy refuses to admit or deny that that is the case. But why else would they call the Naval Air Station also Naval Ammunition Depot, as mm-hmm. it had been originally called many, many years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So it would raise a lot of interesting question whether or not the Navy can sublease or give them a license to use that. I don't know if that issue had been raised from that point of view, talking about the so-called national security interests.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That, and although it didn't come up in the hearing, it was one of those, you know, things you keep in Plan B.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to use it, you go to the Plan B.
Mm-hmm.
But that was there. We raised it at another time when we were talking about Haleahi, if you remember that,
mm-hmm.
Carol. That was another issue. But we wrote a letter questioning the high security issues at that ammunition depot and the need to either secure it or leave it the way it is, you know, where hunters can go through and whatever. But I won't go there today. That's another story. I think the other concern we had about the road was that at any time the Navy can, because it's revocable, if you were an owner of one of the warehouses or you were a renter of one of the warehouses on that proposed light industrial park, one would expect that you would have access at all times, at every day. And if there was for any reason a need to revoke that access, who's going to compensate me? And how long is it going to be? And what's going to become of my business? So there are a lot of issues around the road that makes it very, very difficult for them. But the issue is still there. They are coming back this time through a side door, another door. Because, you know, there are many doors to things, as you
mm-hmm.
said.
Mm-hmm.
They can come back. And that is to go through the Waianae Sustainable Communities Plan. That is the land use plan that the city officials consult as a guide on how land shall be used in various regions. And the developer was very smart in 2008 to insert their purple spot. That's the color the city uses
right.
to designate industrial activities. They were successful in getting that spot placed on their 200 acres. And then the city, then the Department of Planning and Permitting, under that administration, determined that they also needed to put the community growth boundary around the purple spot. Now, that boundary is significant because it signals that's where growth shall occur.
Mm-hmm.
What's ironic is the growth is in the middle of this huge patch of green.
Mm-hmm.
And green is the symbol that is used to designate agricultural district. So what it shows is urban growth that is not contiguous to other urban growth boundaries, smack in the middle of ag land. So what do you think that signals to our farmers when they look at that map? They're highly threatened.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to become, they're going to push me out? And what was so interesting is that one of the farmers right across from that purple spot is a pig farmer. She's probably in her 80s now. She was an active farmer in, if you remember Pukakalama Valley, Bishop Estate
mm-hmm.
land,
mm-hmm.
they were moved out of there.
Yeah.
In fact, they put I don't know whether it was Bishop Estate or there was somebody proposed that this particular family relocate their pig farm to Molokai. Where's the market? You know? So she was able to find a pig farm, a nice piece of land in Lualulei. And so here she's been since, let's see, they were kicked out in the late 60s?
60s or early 70s. Yeah.
So here it is, what, 40 years later? Almost 50 years later? And now her daughter is faced with the possibility of maybe having to be displaced in two generations.
Mm-hmm.
So that particular family was very, very involved in the resistance.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. With this tropic land proposal, was there any proposal or requirement that they build another highway into, or were these tropic land businesses were to use the same lanes that exist now that are already clogged and slowed? What was?
Yeah, they actually, their traffic assessment report recognized that there was a real need for turning lanes, mm-hmm. and for widening the Farrington Highway, especially at the intersection of NAD Road and Farrington Highway. However, as analyzed by the State Department of Transportation engineers, the congestion created at that intersection was not a regional issue. It was a project-specific issue. Mm-hmm. So it did not meet the criteria for state investment in the improvement. So the entire cost for improving the access at the highway will be borne by the developer. Mm-hmm. And that is just to take care of that intersection, with the presumption that they will have the license to use the private Navy Road. But there was no proposal. In fact, their engineer never examined what the impact was on their legal entrance, which is Hakimo and Farrington. So it just showed the presumption on their part that this was something reasonable that they should be able to succeed in acquiring from the Navy. So they paid no attention mm-hmm. to the
now,
other side.
Speaking of Kahea, how does one reach them, learn more about them, make donations or support? And what did they fund this themselves, this effort? And did the elder, the Kupuna, have to pay? How did that work out?
That was all funded by Kahea. They went beyond just doing all the legal filings. We had a series of huaka'i, these are tours, into the neighborhood, introducing people from all over the island to the place so they could get a sense of where things are, what it feels like to live in that community, and what something like this new proposal for industrial park, what that would do to the community, to the region, to the character of the area. And that was all organized and paid for through grants Kahea sought for us. They even paid the court, the filing fee. And so this little group of wonderful, wonderful women are now deeply involved on the other end of the state. They're up on Mauna Kea. They are the group that has the intervener status to battle my own institution. So they're out there battling the University of Hawaii. And I think, Carol, if you saw the article in the paper maybe a month or two ago, it detailed the amount of money that the university has invested in legal services mm-hmm. Outside of the university's own attorney general's services that are subsidized, provided for by the state. They went outside to get private legal, services. Mm-hmm. And I think the bill was over it's close to $2 million, I think.
That explains why they have to raise tuition.
Yeah, and they're battling Kahea, which is this group of, basically it's Marty,
yeah.
Townsend, and a bunch of interns, and maybe two staff.
Yeah.
And that's it. And they were able to help us take on this this partnership, and I can tell you they've done a lot of developments in the island. They're well-known characters with, deep pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And Kahea was able to take them on. And now Kahea's out there trying to, they're succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some ways, sometimes even embarrassing the university in their supposed commitment to the Hawaiian people,
mm-hmm.
Recognition that they have a an obligation to the natives here for their education. And it's more than just education. It's their education, the essence of their education is their culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're out there battling this. So Kahia needs, we need donations to and take on this Goliath.
What is the website or how do they contact?
It's www.kahia.org. Mm-hmm. And on their website, you will see a link where one can make a donation. And we're really little guys. So our donation is, you know, if you can give us $20, mm-hmm. we think $35 is a lot.
Yeah.
But that's what we're looking for.
I envision, I know of Kahia way back when it started, and I know that from what I do, mm-hmm. out of pocket and mm-hmm. trying to be effective, and you don't have the big bucks, and mm-hmm. that's what you're fighting is
big bucks.
And when they run out, they reach over the shoulder, and the developer or whomever gives them more money. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the University of Hawaii is serving that role.
Right.
We will defend you against the native people, and in turn, we will then reach out and have an education program for the native people. So you educate them, but then on the other hand, you're serving as a pass through for monies. But if I could only say what Kahia does, I know the importance of having a lawyer.
Yes.
And I know the importance of when you enter that courtroom or hearing, it's no more. Hello, Auntie. It's procedure, and that person, due process, and that individual company is going to demand that. There's no more human spirit and the aloha spirit. They abandon that immediately. They turn to Your Honor or Mr. Chairman. You know, we file ours in time, but the kupuna here, they were late 2 days, or they couldn't have the filing fee of $450 or whatever the filing fee. Sounds smanini, but $450 for senior citizens to be taken out of their pocket and to fight Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that everybody in Waianae should, in fact, be donating. And I don't mean to say that, because it's their interest. Whether you got $1 million house or have no home at all, you really owe it to yourself to look at this organization, because they're out there watching for you while you're vacationing, going to Vegas. They're holding the fort down, so to speak, in small.
And that's a good statement, Carol, because, you know, the Concerned Elders of Waianae have never gone to the community to ask for monetary help.
Mm-hmm.
They've simply done the work. But in this case, this has been a far different level of challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And now, the call for donations,
mm-hmm.
it's real. And I'd like your plea to the Waianae people, because it's about the people.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the resident. It's about the person who considers Waianae their place.
Mm-hmm.
Who believes that they have, they own it too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also speaks to the engagement of every resident out there in protecting their home.
Mm-hmm. Well, I say Waianae, but we all benefit, because if Kahia was there, I can see the politics has crept as we see it all over the state. Today, a proposal go in, a little fuss goes out. Laie, for example, they tell us we want to build a $200 trillion system when they really only want to build $2 billion system.
Mm-hmm.
But then they figure you've come in and fight, and then you succumb to the deal and the compromise, because we are all educated and civilized people now. We'll compromise, while in fact we should pull from our savage and say, no, you can propose what you want, but we want none of it, because, as you described, sitting an industrial site in the center of areas, farms that have become certified as organic and what have you, who's doing the thinking? Well, I'm sorry, probably no thinking going on there. But Polka, if you would give us some input on that. And this is the Carol Cox Show. I'm speaking with Miss Lucy Gay and Polka Lanui. about Kahea and the benefits. And please, the guys, all of you, if you like to go to the beach and surf and you live in Kahala, you need to support. If you live in out of a shopping cart and down there at the airport, you need to support. Because guess what? They also, if a developer comes in and there's pollutants, we all suffer. So it's not just, and on the Big Island and anywhere, whoever's listening or hearing this message should know, try and get in touch with Kahea and give them the support, financial and otherwise.
If I may briefly add 2 points, not perhaps directly on point with what you folks have been talking about. First is a question to Lucy with regards to the access road and the developers attempting to obtain an easement to the access road. You know, you're going to have a lot of employees who are going to be employed by the developers. Suppose a person does not have national security clearance, or his security clearance is not secret or top secret. In fact, he's somewhat suspect. Will they close the road to that person because of the national security clearance or some kind of a secret clearance? That would be point number one. And then the second point is, let us not forget that September the 1st is a deadline for the city and county planning for the year 2035 in resetting their general plan. What I'm hearing now is that essentially they want to take property out of agriculture and change its designation to industrial or whatever the change is. It's an opportunity for people to themselves be active, get into the website, answer the survey that is now out, and make a point. One of the many points that can be made is that any land whose designation is changed for or taken out of agriculture, within 25 years, there has to be a reversionary clause that it needs to revert back to agriculture as we look at the long-term self-sufficiency of these islands. It's another opportunity to put a block to the continual press of moving Hawaii away from self-sustainability. And so that's the only two points that I have.
And they're very important points, because that general plan becomes the guideline for all sustainable plans and all requests for any boundary change, any zoning change. So you're looking forward, you know, long span of period. And when I read that, the general plan, there's a section on agriculture. It was really interesting how the DPP staff, or whoever wrote that section, present the issue. To argue for the reduction of ag land and for increasing urban land, they make the argument that it's a reasonable thing to do. After all, we have excess water. They make that claim in terms of millions of gallons that we draw. They're really, according to their numbers, there's excess water, and, you know, water's critical to ag. And the second thing they make is a claim that we also have excess farmlands. So if we take 200 acres here, 400 acres there, you're just making a little dent in the amount of, I think they said 30,000 acres of excess lands. So they develop the claim so that it looks like their conclusion is reasonable and wise. So you have to question the premise. You know, so I really suggest that, encourage people to go, not just read the front end, read all the supporting sections of it. And we were particularly interested in ag. So, you know, for us, for anybody out on outside of the urban core in the second urban city area, you all need to go take a look at that, because it's casting your areas as, you know, prime fishing ground for removal of ag lands for development. And when they go before decision-making bodies, the bodies are going to ask the question, is your proposal consistent with the general plan? And the answer is going to be yes. So what do you think the decision is going to be?
If I may intervene just for a minute, it seems that the planners assuming or accepting the present condition, and we should plan around the present condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's like denying that the Titanic is sinking after we've already hit the iceberg. The American economy is sinking.
Mm-hmm.
The dependence on American shipping and the food that is being brought in cannot continue as we prepare for the next 25 years. We have to think about self-sufficiency, about sustainability. So the present condition is not acceptable. We have to plan and prepare for the storm that is coming.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not where the planners are at, and so we need to cast our vision as to where Hawaii needs to be, always being able to be completely self-sufficient, and that is not where it's at. So making those things and then preserving our agricultural lands has to be an input that is made. I'm sorry for
you. No, I think you're right, and they also talk to that issue of food security in that general plan. And they use the threshold of 100% self-sufficiency. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not 100% perfect. And I don't know that anything in this world is 100% perfect. But they use that as the basis for then arriving at their conclusion that it's foolish.
Mm-hmm.
It's foolish for anyone to argue for food security. And they come at it from the threshold that achieving 100%. There are other arguments they use, but what I'm trying to, I think, convey to the listening audience is you need to read the plan and try to imagine as you're reading it, where is it that these thinkers who put this plan together are trying to lead us? What kind of Hawaii are they envisioning for you? And is that your vision?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that your dream? Or your nightmare?
Mm-hmm.
Which is it?
Well, there are some implications here, health-wise. I don't believe that the population here in Hawaii and the native people can get by on going to the big box stores and buying bagged broccoli and asparagus. And what about the other vegetables, that the long beans and all of those things?
Yeah, the wing beans, the palang, you know.
Right.
It's one of those beans that... it's so high in protein,
mm-hmm.
and you find them in Filipino stores.
Yeah, and so this is, it's speaking to the health of the people. So
mm-hmm.
if everything comes in a plastic bag at $4.99, and we can't all eat strawberries at $4.49 and blueberries imported and all, something needs to give in that sense. But if the city and the state and our planners and official planners, there shouldn't, if they were doing it right, the kahia wouldn't we wouldn't have a need for kahia.
That's right.
That right there tells you enough that mm-hmm. something's wrong, and I don't have the ability to question them legally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can go out and point things out that's broken, but then trying to take that and travel to the courtroom or the boardroom and speak to them legally, I'm at a loss.
Mm-hmm.
So, this Marty Townsend, for example, I mean, you know, we often ask, why does a politician go to college and then go and then get a $9.99 an hour job to help the people? Well, we know that, but Marty is actually out there helping the people.
Yeah.
I mean, who in this day and age go to college and return to become the warrior while everyone else is driving by in Mercedes and their biggest thing, to get a BMW with a pink, whatever. I admire her for that, and others who do that, because I know what it takes to give. It you know, you're standing out there worried about the birds,
yeah.
And you're thinking, and everybody else is driving by with these beautiful cars, and you think to yourself, well, maybe I should put my energy, not really, but that's why we need to support any efforts like Marty and the Kahea and mm-hmm. Tropic Lands. And mm-hmm. if you want to stay a couple more minutes in the next hour and share with us some of the other projects and some of the other issues that are facing Waianae, because, and there are many in Waimanalo, and I'm sure mm-hmm. if people have problem in Haleiwa
mm-hmm.
or Punalu, Marty will be there with
right.
you know, what is a what horse do they ride? I mean,
if I may interject, community organizing is a very sacred occupation, and even Barack Obama had turned back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
I think in if you look at the last campaign, they were always down rating, well, just these community organizers with no experience.
Right.
But that is where the heart and soul of good social work begins and ends. I just wanted to throw that in. And, you know, the thing is, many of our young students who go to law school, who go to medical school, go with the intent of providing that kind of service.
Mm-hmm.
But when they enter into the field, there's just no opportunity or very few opportunity that presents themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we need to do is encourage and try to provide the arena where they can at least survive.
Right.
I remember when I went back to Waianae to practice, I lived on food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
And went homeless for a period of time. But the community needs to be there to accept, to support, and to sort of protect and malama these folks who want that opportunity to provide service to the community.
A native man homeless in his own nation. Wow, progress is really good. We're really doing good, aren't we?
That's the price that comes with doing the work.
I love progress in capitalism. A native man is homeless.
Houseless. My home was the community.
Well, houseless. But anyway, it's a sad occasion, mm. the way things, and it's like this great amoeba just, and you think when you beat it back, mm-hmm. as you say,
mm-hmm.
they'll be back.
Yeah, but it's wonderful beating them.
Yeah, it is. But that should be the catalyst for yeah, others yeah. out there yeah. listening to yeah. this show and others out there yeah. that busy with their schedules but have money
yeah.
or have some resources, in-kind services. Or Marty and those guys could use an office. Maybe there's mm-hmm. someone could donate an office space or donate, right. you know, equipment rather than junking it or something,
right.
That kind of is a write-off. So, again, it's Kahea was soliciting support for, and that's kahea.org, www.kahea.org. Anyway, we'll be back shortly, and if you want to stay for the next couple, 10 minutes or whatever, okay. however you need, we're not here entertaining. Hopefully, people are learning something. And we'll be back shortly.
Tune for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. And my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, "Boy, boy, oh, she's sitting out there on the moon. She said
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, second half. We're here with Miss Lucy Gay and Pokalanui. We're talking about Kahea and hoping that you can support Kahea and its efforts because they support the community. But before that, I have Dr. Jill Vokes on talking about... I want to try and find some homes for stray and homeless pets or houseless pets. And please, if you got a soft spot or an empty space at home, they could... Dr. Jill, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Carol, and I wanted to thank you so much for what you're doing, bringing up all these important issues.
Yeah, thank you.
And I do have some beautiful cats and kittens on each side of the island also. They've been abandoned and rescued by some very responsible people. We hope to find loving homes for these friendly and playful kitties.
Mm-hmm.
All the cats and kittens are neutered and microchipped, vaccinationed, and wormed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a pen or pencil right now, whether you're on the west side or on the east side, Haleen has got some very, very nice, clean, and friendly cats and kittens of all colors and sizes. And her number is 282-0388.
Okay.
Also on the west side, Wendy has been doing this for many, many years, and she's a wonderful, wonderful rescue person. And her number is 227-9329.
Okay.
And thank you so much again.
So they're all vaccinated, neutered, and looking for a home, ready to go.
Exactly.
So.
Yes.
All righty. Well, thank you. And you're the mobile cat bird, Dr. Jill.
Right, the mobile vet, Dr. Jill.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Have
all
a
right.
great day,
Aloha.
Everyone. Bye.
Now, I also want to make sure that keep checking our website. We'll be posting other pets and dogs and cats, but they need a home, folks, and save you some money and help a friend out. Okay. Anyway, back with Miss Lucy Gay and Pokalanui, and we were talking about Kahea, and what are some of the other projects facing Waianae, for example, because you work over there, that Kahea is helping or will help if they have the resources to help?
Well, as I said earlier in the early hour, the first hour of the show, the Waianae Sustainable Community Plan will be going before the City Council.
Mm-hmm.
And Kahea has been helpful in the early stages when we were first trying to organize the community in taking positions with that plan, and they helped us to organize our talking points, getting people to come on out. And then as the Mauna Kea issue became more significant, Kahea has had to, you know, pull back some because, and we're in a position, I think, with some understanding now what we need to do. But for us, I think Kahea will be there to provide for some help, but it won't be at the level that we've had because there are other communities who need them more. I think when we start looking at the issues that are rising in our waters, our nearshore waters, sometime in the future, I think that's going to emerge as a real problem. It's popped up, it's hit up time and time again between the conflict between the commercial fishermen, the traditional fishermen, and recreation users, especially those who do tourist attraction kind of activities. The competition for the ocean space, the way in which they use the ocean space, very problematic. And I think at some point the state will have to deal with that issue. They attempted 2-3 years ago to do a baseline study, but we haven't seen anything come out of that. And the baseline study was Lingle's attempt to try to figure out how to manage the space out there in the ocean so that people could use it for their various needs, whether it was diving, snorkeling, traditional fishing, whatever that was, parasailing, whatever. So you could at least, like a ballpark, you know, define what kind of, by the design of the park, well, you only do volleyball there, and then on this end, well, you can do open field stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we really have nothing like that out there. And so at some point, that concern will arise, its head will rise up, and an organization like Tahia will hopefully be there to speak and help the community voice its demands.
Mm-hmm.
At the body, whatever that body is going to be, it probably be DLNR, I think, to demarcate the ocean and delimit the activities.
Mm-hmm.
Without Tahia, who's going to be there?
Well, I envision commercial fishing cages off Waianae in the very near future. Who's going to stand up and fight? The fishermen with the rods and reels and the threats? It takes legal muscle, you know, and so...
Well, you know, Carol, just talking about that, it's not just legal muscle. It's looking at who you are going to take on. So in the case of the cages, the recent one was off the Kona Coast,
mm-hmm.
Alinuihaha Channel in that area. Two huge cages.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with not the DLNR, you're dealing with, I think it was NOAA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, big guys. I mean... And, sad to say, I think one of the cages is lost at sea.
Well, that's always
and
been...
And even to charge them on their authority to even give permission to put those contraptions out there. I mean, the federal agency asserts it's their authority,
mm-hmm.
and yet there's nothing that authorizes them in their regulations.
Yeah, and people don't understand that the presence of the cages aren't
mm-hmm.
just a simple problem environmentally.
Mm-hmm.
That then becomes their ground. You don't have right to go near that. They set
mm-hmm.
off a closure zone around it.
Mm-hmm.
You have no right to be there, and not to mention the pollutants and the feed
mm-hmm.
and the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're on that, just we know that the DLNR has no one in the capacity of monitoring and sampling the waste and the byproducts of these nets, and no matter what they tell you, and we have them off Ever Beach, and they will expand because it's been precedent now set to lease in 65 years or 50 years or whatever the outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the types of things that
mm-hmm.
Kahea, and I don't know anyone.
Let me say something about, and I recognize the importance of legal support.
Mm-hmm.
My experience has shown that you cannot have a community depending on legal support so much so
mm-hmm.
that they feel that, okay, we have an attorney in sight, an attorney has taking the case,
mm-hmm.
and then we can sit back. Because
right.
when that happens, the force that has raised the issue then dies down.
Mm-hmm.
So while it is important that you have that legal instrument to assist, the real action, the heart and soul of that movement has to come from people with that broad vision and dream, not to concede it to an attorney,
mm-hmm.
but to carry that dream forward and continually work on that dream.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the caution that I would have.
And, you know, that's exactly what we experienced, where Kahea was like a tool, but it was not the toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
The concerned elders and many, many others in the community, the Ma'o kids from the farm, some of our students from the Hawaiian Study Program out in Waianae, I mean, all over the community,
mm-hmm.
they were the ones meeting and addressing their even sometimes their strategies they wanted to apply. And Kahea listened. That's one thing they do well. They listen well, but you're right, they are not
And I think the fight itself needs to be carried into
mm-hmm.
policy making.
Yes.
And as we look at 2035, or as we look at any policy agenda, we need to say that the commons those areas that belong to all of us cannot be converted into a commodified entity like land had been converted, which raises another whole issue of whether or not the great Mahalia was really all that great in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
But now what they are doing is they are turning to our ocean, and perhaps later on in some areas they have turned to the air to commodify
right.
the purity of that air. So that kind of mentality and foresight has to be addressed now. And so we need people to step in and express our hopes and dreams and fight it in that way. And don't just let it pass by because Noah or whoever else has claimed jurisdiction. It is our jurisdiction. It is our kuleana because we are the people who are going to suffer the consequences or enjoy the benefits of these decisions.
See, my thinking is consistent with yours. That's why we have the Hawaii Potpourri Show. With Pokalanui. That's why we have the Carol Cox Show. You know, while I solicit on behalf of Kahela, mm-hmm, I'm a strong mm-hmm. believer in give me a camera, a pen, and a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to wait until it get adjudicated because mm-hmm. you can get tricked in there. But yeah. that trickery is above me and so beyond my mm-hmm. thinking. Mm-hmm. So I resort to the tactics that I see. Some people are more deathly afraid of being embarrassed and having
yeah.
a financial loss immediately than going to the judge and working. And then
on that point, if I may expound just a moment or two more on this idea of STEP, STEP.
Uh-huh.
You always have a system that operates,
mm-hmm.
okay? And so that's the S. The T, you're running off? This is going to be quick. Just sit here.
I got to go pray.
Wait, you can pray later on. Pray for me.
See, that's the other element of fighting. You got to pray.
The T is for the use of terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you get into a particular courtroom or a particular arena, they use terminology that you really don't understand. Sometimes you thought you understand English,
mm-hmm.
but you find out when you get in there that they've changed the use of that word,
mm-hmm.
like the term sovereignty and other mm-hmm. words. Always remember that the T should stand for truth,
mm-hmm.
and always aim at and go after that. Don't worry about how embarrassed you may look or how awkward you may look, but remember, it's always not just a specialized terminology, but always hit for truth.
Right.
The E stands for elitism.
Mm.
Or you're not an attorney, or you didn't graduate from Harvard, or you didn't this and that. They always have this classification of who you are,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in the legal field or in the field of medicine or behavioral health or whatever it is. And for what we need to do is train people to change that elitism to egalitarianism,
right.
that is equality of all people. So don't feel embarrassed because you don't understand and you didn't come from their particular school, but insist on being able to be a participant on an equal basis. And then the P is for that idea of pushing out. They always try to eliminate you. They're going to fine you. They're going to push you out of the system so that you don't have a base or a basis for entering and
mm-hmm.
engaging them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And remember that the P should always stand for partnership. And you are an appropriate partner
mm-hmm.
in these discussions, in these forums, and the rest. So what you need to do is being able to convert this step that they will keep you out of by finding ways of getting in and being a full participant to the engagement in these discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever I send my managers of certain programs into areas that they are not familiar with, I go through this process and have them understand that they are just as legitimate as anyone else in this particular arena, irrespective of where the arena might be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pokal, the very thing you described, when I think about the issues or that we've been involved with in the community, when I get signals of those kind of elitism, exclusiveness, discrediting you and all that
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff, I take the way I try to overcome what I see as an obstacle. I mean, they're trying to push, is I go, ooh, we must be on the right track. Yeah, so, you know, and I think the way I do it, very local style, is And I teach this to the students that I work with. I said, you know, you take this approach and you say, nah, for real, who's this? Because what that does, I think it allows you to not readily subject yourself to the assumptions that they're trying to overlay on you, and thereby, you know, silence you.
Mm-hmm.
So just remember your local style when you play it in the playground. Man, for real, what else is that? Really?
Yeah, well, Lucy, thank you. And I know you got to get off and go to church there, and we appreciate you coming in, and anytime.
Okay.
That's what this station is for, this show is for.
And you know, you're always welcome in wine. I mean, when we go to lunch, we can't even sit down without 10 people saying, hey, there's my man. There's the Carol Cox guy. So you're always welcome in the community,
well,
Carol.
Well, good. All righty. Thank you. Aloha.
And thank you, Carol.
Okay, thank you. And your show is on
from 6 to 8 in the morning.
On Sunday mornings.
Sunday.
And then Saturdays, too, now.
Yes.
Because I listen to you on Saturdays.
Thank you.
And
from 4 to 6 o'clock in the afternoon.
And your Libya discussion was quite informative yesterday. So, you know, and again, speaking of that ability to dare to speak about it. And because we can't say certain things about our friends, but our friends will do us in. But your show, I really appreciate what it is, no matter how people find it annoying or what you might say. But we need the truth.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. At least we need to never stop trying to find it.
Right.
We don't know if it is necessarily the truth as it comes out from us. But
allow the other fellow to talk at least and share what he thinks and what he feels or she feels or they feel, you know.
Yeah.
I appreciate your show. And
thank you.
Thank you, and see you later then.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All righty. Well, again, this is the Carol Cox Show, and it's always fun, and we're going to change subjects here and switch tracks. But don't forget, if you can, find some kindness in your efforts and in your heart there. Give to Kahea, K-A-H-E-A, the Hawaiian Alliance, and you can go to their website, Kahea, Kahea.org. Again, thank you all for listening, and I'm going to take a brief break here, and I'll be right back. So don't go anywhere, and we'll be right with you.
Like I'm bugging you, honey. Oh, moody woman, you change like the weather. Moody woman, but you got it together. Moody, moody, moody woman, I love you. You bet your life I do. Oh, variety is the spice of life. Yes, the pain makes the pleasure nice. You make my day when you say you need me, but that's no way to play when you say you're gonna leave me.
the drums and the beat of your own heart as you and your family encounter lions running loose in the lush tropical setting of Foster Botanical Gardens. You've seen the Chinese lion dancing at New Year. Well, meet this mythical creature's cousins from Korea, Okinawa, northern China, and special visiting lions from Africa, Japan, and Nepal. Join the lion dance journey at Foster Botanical Gardens Sunday, August 28th. Doors open at 4:15. More info at 808-524-8416 or join us at liondancejourney.com.
Okay, welcome back to the second half of the Carol Cox Show. I just enjoy sitting around talking with Polka and Lucy, and hopefully you enjoyed it and found it informative. 524-1080 if you'd like to call in, have anything that's bothering you or troubling you. But I'm going to just talk briefly about a few things, but one of them is Governor Neil Abercrombie. You've heard me have some comments and what have you, but, you know, the promises that he made, and I don't even know that I would equate them to describe them as promises. I don't believe that he ever intended to do anything but what he had his mind set on when he campaigned, and there was no promise, no commitment to what he was saying other than he had his own ideas and his own strategies, and the hell with the rest of us. I posted some pictures up, and if you remember, we should have gotten our first indication when he had that guy spray paint, the graffiti king, spray painted a portrait of him. And I look back at that now, and I had the occasion to speak to him there. And I look back now, and I say to myself, this was the telltale sign. He never intended. He's in his own mind. He's a legend in his own mind. And for a guy that has been on social trough for all of his professional life, he's been a teacher, he's been a city council, he's been, and all of these retirements that he has, so he's not bothered by anything. And yes, he's extending a little kind gesture to the native community, the Hawaii community, but he's also saying the hell with the rest of us. And what I say to Mr. Abercrombie is that, let me just give you some examples. You know that he now, under his jurisdiction, is the DLNR. And I have to be fair, because if I'm not fair and pointing out things, I think you have a right to tell me that I'm fake and all of that. Now, you remember when Ms. Thielen was in, Governor Lingle appointed Laura Thielen, and Laura Thielen appointed Mr. Mark Young, who was a administrator with Coast Guard, and she did a lot of things that were quite questionable, and we called her on the carpet, and she in turn hired this gentleman, left the position open for a long time, and just to favor this guy, then he up and quits on her without her knowledge, and supposedly. Now, I spoke to Neil Abercrombie myself when he was candidate Abercrombie, and he assured me that he understood the plight and all of the issues facing the environment and Hawaii's fragile environment and resources. And he assured me that he would be working hard and taking quick actions to address the Department of Land and Natural Resources conservation enforcement issues. To date, what Neil Abercrombie did to address that is nothing. Now, I wrote way back on July 6, 2011, and further back than that, with and asked some questions regarding the appointment of Mr. Randy Awoh, temporary acting chief that replaced Mark Young back in November. And do you know that what is happening here? Mr. Awoh is from Maui. And I asked these questions, and Abercrombie would never respond to me, just flat out ignored me. Donald and De La Cruz for months just flat out ignored me. I mean, I may have been just a rock on the side of the road. That's how much respect they show for anyone. If you're not waving their banner and saying nice things about them, don't ask them questions, because if you do, no transparency. It's a secret organization. Talk about the Bilderbergs. Look at these dudes. Who is this man we call the governor now? And so I wrote and asked questions of Abercrombie and these questions, and he just flat out refused to respond. So I had asked, how long has Mr. Awo been serving as a conservation resources enforcement? Now, I sent this to William Isla as well, who is Abercrombie's appointee as the chairman of DLNR. He's serving in the same capacity as Laura Thielen did when she appointed Mark Young. Now, the first time around, I didn't get a response from Isla, so I don't know if that was because he's really busy or this dictator who he is now working for, and this man that does everything in the dark and only he and Mark know what's going on. I'm suggesting that at that level of government, there's no respect for you and I. There are absolutely none. So I asked these questions. How long has Mr. Awo been serving as Conservation Resource Enforcement Administrator? And they answered, since November 2010. And he is currently acting enforcement chief. Now, this is the top official in law enforcement. This is the person that makes sure things are working fine, so when you, a citizen, see a violation out there and you call up, there is adequate coverage, that the gentleman that is responding has the proper radio, has the proper training, and all of this. Well, I go on and ask, is Mr. Arwell receiving per diem during his assignment to this temporary position? They answer yes. Now, they didn't go out of their way to answer the questions in detail. So I then ask, how much per diem does he receive daily while serving in this position? Per diem amounts are set by the contract. This is what they answer to me. The per diem amount is determined by bargaining unit contract. He receives $90 per day per diem for overnight inter-island travel and $20 per day meal allowance for the same-day travel. Now, he's here, so he's getting, since November of 2010, Mr. Randy Awo, as this letter states, or their answers that they provided, receive $110 a day, not to mention his salary, that he can work here in Honolulu while his permanent station is in Maui. So what is this with Abercrombie talking about saving and taking away from the hurricane funds and all of those other things, when in fact this is really a luxury that I don't believe that we can afford for many reasons? But at $110 per day, and he gets a salary, why are we paying per diem when we could appoint someone here in the acting capacity? Or why not go ahead and appoint him or open the position up for competition and fill that position so that we could save money? So I don't believe that Abercrombie has any idea about saving money, and the only thing that he talks about is when he thinks, he don't admit that he's raided the funds, but when he talks about his success. But he's also raiding this fund. And I ask, does Mr. Awo return home on the weekends? Now get this now. I'm trying to ask specific questions so I can't misquote them or make a false statement or misrepresent something. This is the answer they get. I ask, does Mr. Awo return home on the weekends? Their answer, usually. If yes, does the state pay for his flight to and from the island of Maui? Yes. So imagine, every weekend now, they didn't bother to go into details as to how often he travels back there. But I'm going to take the liberty, being that they say usually, and they were liberal with their answers, I'm going to be liberal with my thinking. So if he gets $110 per day for every day from November 2010 to present, He either stayed here on the weekends and received it, or he got on a plane and we paid that airfare to and from. What a luxury. Yet, Neil Abercrombie told us that he's going to fix the problem. Now, I then go on to ask him, is Mr. Awo's spouse or other family members allowed to travel to Oahu at government expense? Well, they were very specific, no. Are the Department of Conservation Resource Enforcement officers or personnel from the island of Maui allowed to travel to and from Oahu to assist Awo while he is serving in this temporary position? No. However, as part of their normal duties as branch chiefs, they are authorized to come over for required meetings. That is an outright lie, because the Ahulaka, the sandbar, they brought people in from there. They brought others in. But simply, this new administration, and I can't put the blame squarely in the laps of William Ila, but he has to own up to some of this, because I know Ila, and I know that he means well, but you can't sit and work for a dictator and rob us and then pay this gentleman excess of $110 a day plus his airfare when he brings nothing to the table. He's not bringing uniqueness that he's going to fix this. In fact, the union is complaining about Awo's activities on a couple of things. So I'm trying to figure this out. We know that Abercrombie is concealing the names of the judicial, but why is he spending with such ease on paying this gentleman $110? And you do the math from November 2010, we'll say, to present date. That is a substantial amount of money if we're supposedly be as financially troubled as we supposedly are. And I asked them if they're bringing in officers from the other islands, provide the names of the employees and number of occasions they were allowed to travel. Were these employees paid per diem and allowed to rent automobiles? They say not applicable. See question above question. This is how loose they were. This is to tell me that they know they were lying. Well, not to mention the fact that they wouldn't even respond to me for months. And again, when they do respond, it's a brush off. Well, I'm not going to take it personal. I'm just going to take what I have and run with it, folks. I say, based on this, the whole ball of wax is corrupt. Neil Abercrombie, he's not doing anything for the benefit of the people of this state. It's all for Neil. Neil has his minions. He reached out and named many of the native people from the native community. But what is he doing for the community collectively? He's ripping us off. To allow this war situation, and I have to, I'm obligated morally to say something about this publicly, because when Laura Thielen was in, we didn't save any ink on speaking about her and writing about her, and I think fair is fair. And if Ila is going to tolerate that, then they need to have a master plan, because when they send out, you saw them on TV talking about how they're going to protect the community, and they gave two people that they gave tickets to on the Ahulaka situation were military. You may not know it, but that situation, as I explained, the people didn't even know the rules. They were military people. So, but just to make sure, now, I've spoken with a couple of the officers. I'm told that some of the Maui people have communicated that they were informed by administration, you go out there, and they took away, they took away the officer's discretion because they wanted to make a big hit. And they make it illegal to possess. I don't know if the Constitution allows you to not possess alcohol, but we'll leave that to the legal minds. But if they really wanted to prosecute and arrest and control that area, I'm pretty sure I've seen on occasion that they buy beer and sell beer and drink beer there at the pier. And that's where the accident, the death of that individual, or the injury that led to the death, occurred on the pier. Why not shut that down? But I guess that would impact the state employee who manages that pier now, the Chan, Wesley Chan, not Wesley, but the gentleman there. So this is all poppycock. This Abercrombie thing is, the wheel's going to fall off soon. Because you cannot lie, and hide and expect us to walk around and say, well, yeah, we know one another. We work together. You're a good person. But if you're going to lie and abuse the monies and spend the monies and recklessly, there's absolutely nothing to be gained by Neil Abercrombie's strategy to bring a person here and plop them down temporarily, pay them per diem $110 a day, plus the acting salary now. So is this to help Randy Arwell get his high three? Or is this to help benefit the resources of the state of Hawaii? I say that it's about helping the individual. Now, I said to them, I request approval for appointment by this. When will your administration fill the Conservation and Resource Enforcement Administrator's position? We are presently in the process of filling the Division of Aquatic Resources Administration position. When that is done, administration will begin the process for hiring the DOCARE Administrator. So, in other words, we have a whole different process with the Neil Abercrombie approach. We only appoint one administrator at a time, however long that be. They say they're in the process. What's the process? So how long will that process take? So what they're doing is they're paying their friends and showing favoritism, and they brought people from Kauai. When you can't call the DLNR and get a proper response from officers. Let me give you some examples that I thought with this new administration, and they're familiar with the problems, and Neil Abercrombie has talked at length and has been informed in detail. I offer to interview and write stories to share what he was promising in the Hawaii Fishing News. The Hawaii Fishing News offered him the opportunity to explain what he was going to do openly about the problems in the DLNR and the DOCARE especially, and he didn't bite on it because Neil Abercrombie had his own ideas. He knew what he was not going to do, and he knew what he was going to do. He was pulling the wool over our eyes. So when you take Neil Abercrombie's approach and you hire the aquatics division chief, and God only knows that process takes the same process and time that it takes a grow a rock, I guess. And so what do you do over here in the dock here? So I want to give you an example of some of the things that goes on in the... You have two officers that DLNR, DOCARE officers, that have federal law enforcement jobs. It's law enforcement that operates on the Pearl Harbor and TAM out there in Wahiawa and Federal Reserve. They are actively involved. They are full-time federal employees, law enforcement, during in an eight-hour period. And they're also full-time DLNR officers. Now, how is it that they can operate and work at the federal facility on the same day that they are serving as a game warden on state time? And do they use their trucks? Now, there is another one that works at the airport. And he takes his car down to Pier 19 and parks it in 2 hours early and makes sure he's there in time to go down and work for the security company down at the airport. So are we getting our full hours? Then we have another one who collects blood for veterinarians and haul blood and samples to various facilities, veterinarians or what have you, on government time in government trucks. And yet, we're cutting programs and we're holding back on programs that Neil Abercrombie said he would fix and that he would fund. But now he says he's not funding them. I guess this is consistent with the big lie that he removed so many people from the streets and now found them homes, when at the same time he's over there on the freeway near the airport running the homeless out. Now, that seemed to have been growing in greater numbers than the numbers that he supposedly found to house them. I'm telling you that I thought that with the political manipulation that occurred under Laura Phelan as the chairman of the DLNR, I thought I'd seen the worst. Let me tell you, at least she put Mark Young on the books. She wasn't up front as to how she was doing it, but at least she signed him up and made a definite decision to appoint him and set the leadership. But the problem here is with the Abercrombie administration and his appointees, they're doing nothing. Showing up at the sandbar, bragging about three tickets that they wrote, when in fact the men that were operating it couldn't operate the jet skis. The men that they brought from Maui didn't have the specific training and wrecked one of the jet skis. Apparently he was drinking too, but didn't take a test, breathalyzer. No, but just not trained, not certified. And that was one of the issues that is brought up with by the union on the training. So Neil Abercrombie is there for some other reason. I don't know what the reason is. I think it's just show, and that's it. I don't believe that he's committed to doing anything for the environment. As liberal as he's presented himself, as liberal as we've portrayed him, and as liberal as we think, well, he understands the environment and he's a friend of the environment. In this case, I would say I have to give Laura Thielen a thumbs up on her effort to at least put the man on payroll, let the public know. Now, I'm not applauding her for how she arrived there, but at least she did something. On this side, Abercrombie cannot justify giving $110 a day to a person who brings nothing to the table. And he's fixing nothing, doing nothing. Now, of course, they might argue, well, he's getting money from a nonprofit who's giving money to work with APEC. But the problem is, that's all nonsense and should be dismissed, because on one hand, if that's the case, go down to the Harbor Patrol Police. Now, you know that they were talking about flying a drone under this Abercrombie administration and keeping it secure in the harbors. Yet, they took away the guns from the Harbor Patrol officers. They bought brand new guns, but the officers didn't get training. So you put this new fence, security fence up there, and security and all of this in harbor security, and the navigable waters should be secured, and you put up a fence, and you're going to fly a drone, but the guy that's responding can only come with a can of, I don't even believe they're trained for this, use mace. So something's wrong with this deal with Neil. Someone, if you have an idea or input, I'm puzzled, because I never thought we'd see such mishandling of public monies and public trust. Now, there is the Uniform Information Practices Act. So not only am I relying on thinking that these are educated people, he picked the best, and they're going to respond to the public. Well, I sent my questions in, and Neil just blew me off. Donald and Dale Cruz just blew me off. I mean, I can't wait to see where they land next when this administration have this one-term administration. Probably, unfortunately, we can't recall in this state. But I guarantee you, from what I'm hearing out there, if it was possible to recall Neil, it would happen in a heartbeat. And that's not propaganda, folks. I'm seeing people in civil defense, veterans, and on and on and on, people that embrace this man are saying they wish they had some way of getting him out of office, and the whole gang of his appointees, the ones that were going to come in and do good, but they're never going to step out of line. I can tell you that right now. So when you take Neil Abercrombie and you now have him at the wheel, remember that yellow taxi cab. He's going to deliver us to some point that maybe we don't really want to go, because financially and the management, there's no way you can equip men with a marked unit, with the law enforcement badge, with the state decal, and have them driving about fighting crime when they're saying crime is so bad now and increasing that they need a drone and black fences and what have you, and you take away their guns. That in it is a statement in itself. Now, regarding the Uniform Information Practices Act, so I asked for these documents. I want to see the airways tickets, which it's public money. They were spent and purchased airline tickets. And I asked for that information. Now, this is after months now. I've already asked for it, and they just blew me off. So finally, I hand-delivered it to William Eyler for the second time. And I finally get this lame answer back. But here's the sneaky part. They didn't bother to give me all of the information. They didn't bother to give me a single document. They didn't bother to acknowledge or tell me, look, Mr. Cox, right now we're withholding, as they're required to do under the Uniform Information Practices Act. They're required to tell you why they're withholding and what they're withholding. But instead of that, they just ignored me. And so I call up and said, well, you know, I do have your lame response to my questions, which is okay, but what about my documents? Well, we've sent a request to the Uniform Information Practices, OIP, office to ask them their opinion if we have to release this. Well, why didn't you tell me this months ago? Why didn't you inquire months ago? Why the delay? So what I'm telling you is that when this liberal man tells you that he's going to protect the environment, dismiss him like you would do dishwater. It's all nonsense. He has no plans for the environment. He has no plans for anything. Now, there's going to be some environmental groups out there go, oh, Neil, he's the real deal. Well, I'm here to tell you, if you don't put a head on the snake, it's not going to have any directions of travel. We simply have headless law enforcement people running around serving second jobs, getting per diem, flying back and forth, showing up on TV talking about what great job they did, when in fact, if you want to control what goes on at Ahulaka and make it illegal to fight on the pier, make it illegal to sell alcohol on the pier, make it illegal to serve alcohol on the pier, if you really want to throw out the broad net and bring all of this enforcement. So once again, this is a big lie. The entire process, anyone that got a ticket out there was, in my opinion, was simply wrong. They set up boundaries, and they in turn just basically overnight, no warning, and as I say, I've heard firsthand from officers who say that they know that the officers, for example, from Maui, who, by the way, gave some of the tickets, a ticket at least, and in turn, they were told by the administration that you don't have any officers' discretion. In other words, you can describe it as setting a quota. Whoever you pull over, you give them a ticket. Well, that's taking it, and it borderlines being setting a quota. And I believe that shouldn't be happening and should not have happened. So when you see the guys out there on the boats, they can't even get monies to buy cleaning supplies to clean their boats. Yet, you see this entourage sitting there. You saw Guy Ching, their deputy, talking about this, when in fact the officers are willing to work and should have a plan, but the problem is their leadership is absent. And it's demoralizing the officers. So when you see people out fishing with nets and you call in, they didn't have a dispatcher, I'm told, on the day of the Ahulaka, the great mass law enforcement effort. They didn't have an officer on the at the office to hear or receive a complaint. They were all focused there at the sandbar. What about Waianae? What about the mountains? What about violations? What about other resources that were... So something's wrong with this administration. Neil is not the real deal. I can just tell you that now. And if we think anything other than that, let's make him show now. It's time, it's over. I've been put off by his press. Well, I wouldn't even call it a press. I don't know. It's a depressing personality. But to do this and to shield and to lie and to spend money excessively as if we have a lot of money to pay per diem for a person who's bringing nothing to the table. I'm telling you, nothing is being fixed. The morale of the officers are diminishing worse than it ever been. So anyway, I hope that if you follow this, listen up, let Neil know. Too bad we don't have the ability to recall in this state. But maybe some of you out there have a way of bringing this to the forefront. Let's see if we can send him on per diem, because we're not getting anything. So I'll talk to you next week, and see you later.
Oh, yeah, baby. Like a fool I was.